Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the greatest show in all the land. I'm talking, of course, about Between the Tackles, where I am your host, Hogan, here with my buddy, my pal, one of my co-hosts, Manish Mehta. Manish, it has been absolutely banana town, crazy pants. I'm going to say every other crazy word I can think of in here. Free agency has kicked off. We are officially in the one of the most fun parts of the offseason with the NFL. My man, how are you feeling about free agency so far?
I'm doing great. I wish I could have gotten just a little bit of the nearly $5 billion in contracts that were doled out in the first week or so of free agency. But unfortunately, I did not get a piece of that pie.
Well, we were joking ahead of the time before the recording there about that left tackle, the Tennessee Titans signed from the Steelers that let up 12 sacks and they gave him $20 million a year. Where I told you, I was like, heck, I could top that. I could let up like 50 sacks. They could give me like 100,000 and I would be happier than a pig in crap. So, I mean, it is what it is. But like I said, we're going to get into all sorts of things. For our loyal listeners out there, if you're wondering, our buddy Burgess is unavailable today. He's out busy drinking his sorrows away, probably because of Cooper Kupp not getting signed by the Patriots. I'm just kidding. That's me. I'm the one that's BS about Cooper Kupp not coming to the Patriots. He, unfortunately, as of this recording, is signed with the Seattle Seahawks, which I get it. It's a little bit of a revenge thing there where he obviously wants to get back at the Rams for releasing him, but I really would have loved to have seen Cooper Kupp in a Patriots uniform. But we're going to get right into our first subject, which actually is guys that are now in Patriots uniforms, because we love the Patriots. Well, I love the Patriots. Minis, you love the Eagles. And the Patriots actually got one of the bigger Eagles on the free agency market there, being Milton Williams, signing him to a four-year, $104 million deal. Realistically, you and I were talking again pre-recording about how it's really a two-year deal. We're getting to the contract nitty-gritty stuff a little bit later on to talk about, like Manish knows about everything with contracts. But we just want to talk real quick. First and foremost, I want to ask you, being an Eagles fan, where you got to see Milton Williams play last year with how dominant he was in the Super Bowl and how everybody talked about him going into free agency, did the Patriots get what they wanted in this deal, signing Milton Williams to that deal?
Well, I think it was Mike Vrabel that said after the signing that Milton Williams is going to have to play a little bit more. Now, he played, I believe, 48% of the snaps last year in Philly. Really solid piece to that defensive line, part of that rotation, benefited from playing alongside Jalen Carter, like most players would, being the fact that Jalen Carter is getting, you know, doubled and you know, sometimes even triple teamed on a regular basis. I think he's a good young player. It took a little bit of time for him to kind of get up to speed after he was drafted by Philly. Solid player, going to have much more of an important responsibility in New England than he did in Philly. What I like about what the Patriots did with him is that he's on a second contract. Typically, you want to get those guys who are in their mid-20s, coming off their rookie deals, a lot of good football left in them. I certainly think there's a lot of good football in Milton Williams. I know that you know, some of the critics came out in full force because of the raw numbers in that contract. And as you said, well, you know, we can dive into the details of that in a little bit. But just from a player's perspective, an X's O standpoint, I think he's a really good player. I think you'll be disappointed if you're expecting him to anchor the defensive line and be what Jalen Carter is for Philadelphia. But if your expectations are that he is going to be an improvement along the defensive line, a consistent young player who is still ascending, then I think you're going to be happy with what you got in him.
For sure. He's the type of player that I think, obviously, he got the bag at the right time with the performance he had in the Super Bowl and whatnot, where the potential is there. So it's hard for us to not be excited as Patriot fans. But at the same time, it's kind of like we have to wait and see what he's actually going to provide. And I think a big thing you talked about, Jalen Carter being on the opposite side of him back in Philly, the biggest thing is Christian Barmore. If he comes back healthy, is going to be a huge addition on that defensive line there. Speaking of defensive line, I mean, they're definitely not D linemen. They're not the fatties that, you know, I love to talk about all the time. We'll get to some fatties in a little bit, but we'll talk about some other big, big signings that the Patriots kicked things off with. And actually the first guy that they ended up signing there was Harold Landry III, an old Tennessee Titans guy that Vrabel wanted to get back, giving him a three-year, $43.5 million deal. I don't want to say that they overpaid for him. It's another one of those potentials because he showed a lot of flashes. He showed a lot of grit playing in a very bad Tennessee situation where I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he had about 19 and a half sacks over the last 2 years for a team that barely won 9 games. look at the Patriots. They barely won. They didn't win 9 games the last 2 seasons. So we'll take a guy that can do that. That being said, Harold Landry III is the newest Patriot on there. Again, we love seeing him being reunited with Vrabel. Another linebacker that a lot of people are talking about that I think was a little bit underrated, Robert Spillane. He looks like he could be a steal coming over from the Raiders there. He's been in the league for a little while. Obviously, he was with Pittsburgh for a bit, Raiders. I think he was somewhere else. Either way, he comes a versatile linebacker. This is what they need. They need to right the ship at the defensive side there. And then the guy that I want to actually throw to you, Manish, and get your thoughts about, Carlton Davis III, coming over from Detroit. Now, I know the conversation was there. We're going to talk probably about DJ Reed a little bit later on, where I thought the Patriots were going to target him, especially being an AFC East rival. But Carlton Davis III made himself a name down in Tampa and then was with Detroit last year. A lot of people are saying if he's healthy with Christian Gonzalez, they can make one of the best cornerback tandems in the league. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he may have peaked, but that doesn't mean that he can't play well for the Patriots. It'll be hard-pressed for him to turn back the clock to what he did early in his career in Tampa Bay. But, look, he's going to be 29, I think, by season's end. So he's going to play this season at age 28. That's plenty young enough. He did, you know, resurrect his career to a certain degree in Detroit. Now, what I find interesting is that the Lions, in my estimation, upgraded at the position by letting him go and bringing in DJ Reed, who's about the same age. They paid DJ Reed less money. I think DJ Reed's a much better player, to be honest with you. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it's an improvement for New England. Having him play opposite of Christian Gonzalez is going to fortify the back end. It's not like you can get 2 number one corners for every team. Clearly, Gonzalez is, you know, for my money, a top 5 corner in the NFL. You pair him with a guy who's a solid number 2 cornerback, certainly something they did not have a year ago. And I think that bodes well for New England. So, yeah, it was a good signing. I mean, they had a lot of cash to burn. You know, and I think it was Vrabel that said they were going to be aggressive but not reckless and spend a good amount of money. They did that. I think they gave out about $120 million in guarantees at signing. So the legit, true guarantee, that's a lot of money that the Kraft doled out. And I do think that that Davis and Landry, I'm actually pretty high on Landry. He's also in that 28, 29-year-old age range. But a guy who had, you know, 9 sacks last year, clearly a guy who can be disruptive to a certain degree on the edge. Those are 2 really good pieces. Really, if you just look at the 3 guys we've talked about, clearly, at least on paper, it looks like the Patriots are significantly better on defense. Now, how that translates on the field, to be determined. But, adding Williams and Davis and you even mentioned Spillane, too. So it's 4 guys, along with who's the other guy? Oh, Landry, the guy that I'm high on. I think it's a significant transformation on paper. There's only so much you can do in free agency. It's not like all pro players are shaking off the trees in free agency. So you do the best with what is available. I thought the Patriots did a great job on the defensive side by getting guys who could help them. Did they get everybody that I thought they should get? No, but what do I know? I think Elliott Wolf probably knows a little bit more. And Mike Vrabel probably knows a little bit more than the average fan does. But I thought there were targeted moves at spots that needed to be upgraded. And I think you're going to reap the benefits of it. And what that translates to, wins-loss, to be determined. But at least at this point, heading into the second, third wave of free agency, and then more importantly, heading into the draft, I think that the Patriots have positioned themselves really well on defense by who they added in this first wave of free agency.
You took the words almost like right out of my mouth with everything that you said there, Manish. And I'm gonna leap the praises all over the Patriots in a little bit. We're getting ahead of ourselves. But before we switch things up, I want to talk about some of the guys that the Patriots left off the table there that actually walked away. And of course, those are a couple of captains that are actually leaving the team now. Jonathan Jones, I don't know if he was a captain or not. I could be remiss in saying that, but 9-year vet, won a couple of Super Bowls. He signed with the Washington Commanders. And then I believe actually the other one there, Dedrick Wise, also signed with the Commanders as well, if I'm not mistaken. 2 integral parts of the defense over a long period of time there. I wasn't so devastated to see them leave as a Patriots fan because I think their time was up. It was one of those things where it was the change in scenery was needed for both those players, where Jonathan Jones has lost a step. He was phenomenal early on in his career, where he was a great nickelback, could do a lot of different things. a lot of people actually to this day talk about his absence in the Super Bowl against your Philadelphia Eagles there that first time, Manish, where they got the better of the Patriots, where Malcolm Butler obviously didn't play there. But I think Jonathan Jones's lack of presence was a big factor in that as well. That being said, one other guy I want to talk about before moving on to some other stuff is the one offensive addition that the Patriots made kind of took me off guard was actually Morgan Moses coming over from the New York Jets last year, where this one is, I don't want to say it's a head scratcher. They signed him to a 3-year, $24 million deal, which is not by any means crazy. And I'm okay with it because I think he's a good player. He's very old for the position, being 34, yeah, coming off a tough year with the Jets, obviously, with injuries and everything. Manish, do you see him being a kind of a placeholder where he could help solidify the line with anybody that they go after in the draft and help maybe some of the younger guys there? Or do you see him possibly having to fill in and actually be an integral part of this offensive line to keep Drake May upright?
Yeah, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head with Moses at this point in his career. He'd been very durable for the majority of his career. His play slipped with the Jets, and then he kind of rebounded in two seasons with the Ravens, and then he returned to the Jets. And he's been nicked up here and there. I would just caution, you know, a player at that position, at that age, it is extremely difficult to hold up an entire season. And with his recent injury history, getting nicked up, missing, you know, a handful of games here and there, each of the past several seasons outside of that first year with the Ravens, I would be surprised if he's going to be able to make it, you know, week one to week 18. You know, I don't see him playing 17 games or anywhere close to it, to be honest with you. I think you just have to look in this division last year to find out that guys who used to be good, who are older and have a recent injury history, are probably going to be nicked up and not turn back the clock. And I'm speaking to Tyron Smith, who the Jets were very high on when they signed him as a free agent and Dallas let him go. People thought, well, this is a first ballot Hall of Famer. How do you let this guy go? You just have to manage him. But he was advanced age. He was nicked up. Tackle is a tough position to play at any age, tough position to stay healthy in and play at a high level at any age, let alone someone who's creeping up into their mid-30s. So we'll see how healthy he can be. I'm sure the Patriots are cautiously optimistic. That's why they gave him the deal they did. I have my reservations on whether he's somebody you can rely on in 2025.
Now, I thought where you were going in that direction, you were going to be talking smack about our old buddy Aaron Rodgers, about looking in the division at an aging guy with injury history. I took the bait there.
That's where you're going. There's a lot of wear and tear at the tackle position, and that's why it's rare to see the older guys do really well. How many 35-year-old tackles are, you know, excelling in the NFL? I mean, the only guy I can think of, and I don't even know how old he was at the end, was Jonathan Ogden. Again, he may not even have been 34. I don't remember. I just remember thinking he was a really good player at the tackle spot at an older age.
I was going to say, I think Trent Williams out in San Francisco, but even then he had an off year last year too. But let's get back to the guy I want to talk smack about that we know you love to talk smack about, Manish, is Aaron Rodgers. Because we got to talk about the free agency QB carousel, as you aptly put in our agenda here. And the biggest thing is actually seeing where these quarterbacks actually ended up with the teams that they were going to. And it was funny because I actually was talking to some other people earlier about how when Seattle traded away Geno Smith to the Vegas Raiders, that I was like, that could open up a potential for Sam Darnold to actually make an appearance in Seattle, where I was more leaning towards New York might actually take a humdinger on going after him again and bring him back for round two, which would be fascinating to see.
Let me just add one caveat to that. I'm not saying that the Jets weren't intrigued by that idea, because I don't know, but I can tell you with great certainty that Sam Darnold was not interested in coming back to play for the New York Jets.
Oh, I'm sure he wasn't. I'm just saying I would have been fascinated to see. Right. Like, I know people had it talking and all that, but either way, he ended up going to Seattle. I think it was on a 3-year, $100 million+ deal, getting, you know, well-deserved money for what he did in Minnesota last year, which blew everybody's expectations out of the water. But then some other interesting ones that came through with Justin Fields ending up actually with the New York Jets on a 2-year, I want to say it was $40 million deal, which – We can talk about in just a second there, Manish, but the fact that these younger guys ended up with the teams that they did, what does this mean for Aaron Rodgers now, where I know the meme is circulating through the internet of him solemnly looking out on the beach like, oh, why can't I go to my Eskimo hut and be depressed again and all that, where now he's kind of – he's, if you think about it, is he going to be Pittsburgh's week one starter? Is that how this is shaping up to be?
First, let me say – he has talked about this actually in the past. I think he actually talked about it in his documentary about the paparazzi and how weird that is, having paparazzi. I don't think he had a personal photographer follow him along the beach. I think it was somewhere in Southern California, maybe Malibu Beach. I don't remember, but somewhere in California. It was just funny how that, kind of took off over the past several days. He kind of was looked, had a pensive look on his face, kind of pondering his future with a blanket or something over his head, whatever it was. That aside, I think it makes most sense for him, given his options, because let's be honest, the options are really threefold, and honestly, one of those three doesn't really make any sense for him. But the teams that need quarterbacks, the Browns, the Giants, the Steelers. I can't anticipate any scenario where Aaron Rodgers would want to go to the Browns. Now the Vikings have come up in conversation recently. That gets a little dicey because that doesn't guarantee Aaron Rodgers, if he were to follow, ironically, Brett Favre's career path and go from the Packers to the Jets to the Vikings. The Vikings are in a place where it's year two for J.J. McCarthy, a top 10, top 11 pick, whatever he was, coming off the injury. They clearly did not want to bring back Sam Darnold for the money that he got in Seattle. So they want to hand over the reins to J.J. McCarthy. Now, if I were the Vikings, I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to bringing in Aaron Rodgers on a relatively cheap deal and have him start the season. And then ultimately, depending on how the season is going, hand the ball off literally and figuratively to J.J. McCarthy. It's much like, 15 years ago, when the Giants had drafted Eli Manning, Kurt Warner was their starting quarterback. And I believe the Giants had a winning record about midway through the season when they benched Kurt Warner and gave Eli the reins. Now, obviously, that didn't do the Giants any good for that particular season, but it allowed Eli to hit the ground running the following season. And then, two Super Bowl MVPs later, clearly that was the right choice for the Giants. The Vikings could theoretically do something like that. But would Aaron Rodgers really want to go to a team where he doesn't know when he's going to get yanked? It could be midseason. If the team flops in the first month of the season, it could be the first month of the season. It could be early October. Or even if the team is hovering around 500, could they pull the plug like the Giants did with Kurt Warner? And there's just so much uncertainty there that while there has been some discussion generated by a possibility of Rodgers and the Vikings hooking up, I just think it makes much more sense to go to the Steelers or Giants because you're going to be the starter all season, barring injury. If you get hurt, you get hurt. But if you're healthy, the Steelers are a team that historically, under Mike Tomlin, wins over half of their games, typically makes the playoffs. So you're going to be in the mix throughout the entire season. So your job's not in jeopardy. If you look at who's behind you in Pittsburgh, Mason Rudolph, he's not a threat. So you guarantee yourself essentially a full season if you can stay healthy. The same with the Giants. Joe Shane, the general manager, Brian Daboll, the head coach, they're on the hot seat. John Mara has essentially said that there's a playoff mandate or a significant improvement mandate, or he's going to clean house. So they're going to want to win games. So much like Pittsburgh, Rodgers will be guaranteed the starting spot in New York. I think you just have to look at it from an X's and O's standpoint. If you're Aaron Rodgers, where is there stability for a possible second year with that team? As I just mentioned, the Giants might be cleaning house after this season. If things don't go well, that cleaning house could include Aaron Rodgers, much like Aaron Rodgers saw with the Jets this year. Whereas Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin probably not going anywhere, certainly much more stability in that organization, certainly a greater opportunity for Rodgers to have a two-year runway instead of just a one-year runway with Pittsburgh. And if you look at it, if the supporting cast is a consideration, which it should be, they just signed DK Metcalf to a monster contract, bona fide number one wide receiver there. George Pickens, for all the things you can say about him and his lack of focus and immaturity, such a talent, a guy that perhaps can cultivate that talent playing with Aaron Rodgers. Pat Freiermuth, underrated tight end, really exceptional tight end, if you're being honest about from a pure football pass catching standpoint. And Jalen Warren, who's now got the number one tailback job now that Najee Harris is gone in LA. I think you got great skill position players there. That's just a way of me saying great skill position players, a solid enough offensive line, obviously a lot of respect and a head coach who's going into the Hall of Fame with Aaron Rodgers one day. I just think it makes a lot of more sense to go there. Now, the downside is you're playing in the AFC North, exceedingly difficult division, not to mention an exceedingly difficult conference, the AFC. But Aaron Rodgers, I don't think, would shy away from that. I think it makes too much sense, frankly, for Aaron Rodgers, if given the choice, not to choose Pittsburgh. But, we'll find out if he's going to make this decision anytime soon. As has been the case in his career, much like Brett Favre, things tend to drag out with Rodgers. So we'll see if something happens this week. I think it makes all the sense in the world from his perspective to be a Pittsburgh Steeler this year.
All I know is I want to see more solemnly looking beach shots of him. That's what gets the juices going when we see him miserable on a beach, just contemplating his future. No, I'm kidding. Obviously, it will be fascinating to see if he ends up in Pittsburgh there. And it's actually interesting when you were talking there about Kurt Warner getting benched for Eli Manning. It was ironic that after he left New York Giants that he went to Arizona and then took over for Matt Leinart, who was younger than him and led them to a Super Bowl. Just interesting how careers play out. Like you said, it'll be fascinating to see if Rodgers ends up with Minnesota, Pittsburgh, or heck, he might end up somewhere else that we're not even thinking of at this point, because who had it on their bingo card that Bill Belichick was going to be coaching freaking college football this year? I certainly didn't. So you never know what could happen. One last quarterback that I want to talk about that's technically not a free agent that I want to pick your brain about if he ends up getting moved. And of course, I'm talking about Kirk Cousins, and he's got a deal that's obviously makes things a little difficult depending on what team is going to take a chance on him. But you got to figure that Atlanta is not going to pay to have him sit behind Michael Penix Jr. this upcoming year. So do you think that do you see a team getting desperate enough to take a flyer on Kirk Cousins at this point?
Well, we kind of ran through the handful of desperate teams. The Browns, maybe. I still think, honestly, this is a guy we haven't even mentioned yet. He's cheap. He's probably good enough to have your team tread water. There's a risk there because he's old, could get injured. But Joe Flacco, even though he didn't play great in Indianapolis, I think he played okay, had flashes. And then clearly the year before in Cleveland, he played really well. But that's a cheap option. Kirk Cousins, to me, the money has to be cheap. I did not look up what the financial ramifications would be for Atlanta if they cut him and or traded him. Now, he clearly has made it known that he wants to go to a place that can, feature his ability to start, even if it is for part of the season. Minnesota, ironically, will be a good spot for him, because I think he'd be fine with starting the season and potentially handing the reins off to J.J. McCarthy. But it doesn't make sense from his perspective to be in Atlanta. They were in a playoff race last year where they benched him. It's not as if the Falcons were out of it. They were in a playoff race with a month to go when they decided to hand the reins over to Michael Penix Jr. So, Kirk Cousins, good guy, mentor. I don't think he's going to ruffle any feathers if he does end up staying in Atlanta. But, without looking at the financial ramifications, I don't know why Atlanta would want to keep him. I certainly understand why Kirk Cousins would want to move on. And real quick, I know you want to move on, but you touched on Justin Fields going to the Jets. That's an interesting signing to me. It's a 2-year deal. They can get out of it, after 1 year. I find it interesting because Aaron Glenn has publicly said that they're not rebuilding. And look, there's a number of different ways that you can go about this if you're a new head coach going into a situation like the Jets. You can come out and say we're rebuilding without actually using the word rebuilding. But Glenn has made it clear publicly that they not only want to win, but they want to win now. And their decisions are geared toward winning now. Now, what I would say is that if that is the case, I think that Aaron Rodgers would have been the best option for them, ironically. Because I think Aaron Rodgers, even at this advanced age, is a better quarterback than Justin Fields. Fields offers a running dimension. I know he won more games than people anticipated in the few starts he had early in the season in Pittsburgh. But that offense, if you looked at the way that offense was constructed, you know, somebody might say that's more Arthur Smith than it is Justin Fields. I tend to believe, and just my understanding, you know, from talking to people there is that I think that the Steelers offense, when Justin Fields was the quarterback, was the best possible offense because of Justin Fields' capabilities or lack thereof. You know, he's still not really taken significant steps as a passer from his rookie season. What I thought was interesting this week, like looking at his fourth quarter stats, I think it was Colin Cowherd. I want to give him credit because I think he capitalized it pretty well. Fourth quarter career stats for Justin Fields, really kind of mind-boggling. He's only completing 56% of his passes, 13 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, and a 67.2 passer rating. That is awful across the board. Fourth quarter, four-year career, when you've been in the league for, what, 3-4 years, whatever it's been. I just don't think Justin Fields is that good of a player. I really don't. I think he's a great athlete. I don't think he makes Garrett Wilson any better. I know that Garrett Wilson's happy that he's reunited with his former Ohio State teammate. I don't see how this passing game is going to grow or be anywhere close, frankly, to what it was with an older Aaron Rodgers last year with Justin Fields at quarterback. I don't see it. I just don't think that he has evolved to be anything more than a backup quarterback in this league, a guy who can come in you know, for a game or two or three and give you a spark, maybe win a couple games, but to be the number one quarterback, and I think he's going to be the number one quarterback. Tyrod Taylor's still on the roster, but he's not going to be a starting quarterback. I think Tyrod Taylor could come in at some point for a number of different reasons, whether it's injury or just poor performance by Fields. I just think that this does not make the Jets offense better than it was last year. And it wasn't particularly great last year, but you saw flashes from Aaron Rodgers. And for all the criticism that I've heaped on Aaron Rodgers because of his injury history in recent years and his advanced age, for 2025, I would take a 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers over Justin Fields any day of the week.
Ooh, I love it. That's the clip of the night right there. Everybody clip that out there. Take an old bummy Aaron Rodgers over Justin. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I mean, I'm not kidding. I love it. Because I don't disagree with you at all. I think Justin Fields is completely overrated. And everybody sits there and talks about a lot of the different things he did with the Bears. And it's like, oh, look at what DJ Moore's numbers were when he was with the Bears. And it's like, yeah, they won like three games. What are you celebrating about? Like, that's the Jets' MO. They love winning three games over there in New York, obviously. All right, Manish, before we get into the fun part of this episode where we're going to give our opinions, whether we're right or wrong or anything like that, about all the different things that have happened through free agency so far, we are going to take a very short break to hear from our sponsors here on Between the Tackles. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. All right, we are here back on Between the Tackles. I am always Hogan. Obviously, I would hope I would always be Hogan. That would be awkward if I'm not always Hogan. That would be very interesting. And I'm here with my good pal, my buddy Manish. We love talking football. We're here to talk to you guys about this crazy first week of free agency. And we're going to have, obviously, when this episode drops, it is a special Sunday edition of the episode that we wanted to get out to you guys. And we're here. We've already talked about a couple of quarterbacks. We've talked about the Patriots stuff. We're going to get into the nitty gritty of the different teams that we think either nailed it or failed. And then players that are in good spots or, you know, really put themselves in a hole. And I'm going to get things kicked off talking about the positive side of things. And of course, I got to talk about my New England Patriots. That's who I have to talk about, right? Because at the end of the day, us Pat fans, we have been through hell the last couple seasons, especially last year. And I know that's ironic coming from a Pats fan. We're blah, 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 20 years of dominance. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get it. We're not allowed to talk. Well, guess what? I'm talking. I get to say what I want to say. I think they're doing a phenomenal job so far. Do I think, like Manish, you talked about earlier, do I think that they hit picture perfect signings on everybody so far? Not exactly. I was the one touting from the top of the mountaintop that I wanted Cooper Kupp more than anything because I think he would have been a dynamic player to match up with Drake May there. The wide receiver position is still not solidified with the Patriots. They don't have a great offensive line anymore. They just obviously, I talked about other captains. One player I forgot to mention who got released recently was David Andrews, the stalwart center who's been there for the better part of a decade. And obviously, as much as we loved him, he was injury prone at this point. He was on the wrong side of 30. their offensive line right now is a giant question mark. But on the defensive side, which was supposed to be the strength of this team, they took leaps and bounds in free agency to address players that they needed to get in there. Like I said, we talked about Milton Williams, Spillane. We talked about Landry. We talked about Davis. So the defense is starting to come together, and especially with a defensive-minded guy like Mike Vrabel, those are the things you want to see a team address when they absolutely need to get better, where they only won, what, three or four games last year? I mean, that's unacceptable, especially when you got an owner like Robert Kraft who expects – Super Bowls. At this point, I'd be happy with a winning record, so let's not like get ourselves blown out of proportion expecting Super Bowls or playoffs or anything. I'd like to see a 500 record, if anything. But that's my team for who I think improved the most. Obviously, I have to be biased because it's Patriots. Their argument can be made. There's plenty of others out there. I teed around the idea with Jacksonville because, honestly, I like a lot of the things that Jacksonville did down there. We'll see how it lines up with their coaching and everything else like that. But now I'm going to turn it over to you, Manish. I want you to tell me what team so far is absolutely nailing it in the free agency period that we've seen in the NFL so far.
Well, I love what Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson have done in Chicago. They had an obvious weakness at offensive line. Caleb Williams was sacked 68 times. That's the third most sacks given up by a team in a single season in the history of the NFL. Caleb Williams was the number one pick. That doesn't bode well for his longevity. If he's going to get sacked 68 times, you could have another, what was it, David Carr situation where he was pummeled down in Houston. So what do? They really remade the entire interior of their line. They traded a, I believe, a 2026 fourth round pick to the Chiefs for Joe Tooney. And I know the lasting memory of Joe Tooney, at least for Eagles fans, is him getting really railroaded at tackle in the Super Bowl. But he's a natural guard. He's going to be a guard for the Bears. I think even though he's on the wrong side of 30, he can still play well. Guard, a lot different than tackle. When in your early 30s, you can still play at a highly productive level. The other addition at guard, I thought was a really brilliant move by Johnson and Poles. They traded for Jonah Jackson. Now, Jonah Jackson got a $50-plus million contract a year ago by the Rams, who wanted to convert him to center. In week two, he fractured his scapula. He missed most of the season, more than half of the season. Well, the Bears gave up a six-round pick to bring him back to Chicago, have him reunited with Ben Johnson. Those guys were together in Detroit. And he's going to play his back at his guard position. So you've got two established players at the guard position, Tooney and Jackson. Significant upgrades from a year ago. They signed Falcon center, and I'd be lying to you if I told you that I broke down Drew Dahlman tape, but he's going to be their new center. He is an upgrade from last year's center. So 60% of their line is completely different. Two veteran presences at the guard position. You know the Bears are going to want to run the ball, much like Ben Johnson did in Detroit, running the ball and, you know, getting yards through the air off play action. You know, Jared Goff was great at that. Caleb Williams, I anticipate, would be very good at that as well. It's not a glamorous offseason or free agency for them. They didn't get glitzy names. You know, Joe Tooney's a guy that people know, of course, but you know, getting interior offensive linemen for where the Bears are, new head coach wanting to establish a run, wanting to protect their number one overall pick at quarterback after he was throttled all of last season. Just sound strategy. I liked it a lot. I thought that's what makes free agency fun for me. It's not, you know, on Monday when the legal tampering period begins and there's a flurry of off signings, guys getting 50, 60 million bucks. And you think, oh, wow, man, this, like, these teams did great. Look, they just signed three guys in the first 3 hours of the legal tampering period. No, I think the smart teams who make strategic additions are the ones that should be lauded the most. And I think the Bears just, you know, giving up a fourth rounder, a sixth rounder, and paying a modest salary to a center, and you're getting three upgrades in the interior offensive line. Just really great planning, great strategy on paper. We'll see how it turns out. Really impressed with what Ben Johnson did, you know, in the first few months of being the new Bears head coach.
Now, The only thing I want to give caveat to, though, we got to be careful, is I remember you promised last year that the Bears are going to be decent with all the players they did last year. So don't take it to the bank with what Manish says about the Bears offensive line.
Look, if you told me the over-under on Caleb Williams getting sacked was like 65, I would have said, well, maybe they won't be that good. But getting sacked 68 times is absolutely absurd. Again, third most in the history of the NFL.
Hey, they're breaking records in the worst way possible, and that's just what the Bears do at this point. And like I said, I'm a Caleb Williams hater, obviously. I'm the resident Caleb Williams hater, so I don't mind seeing it. I don't mind seeing him get his booty kicked all over the field. So I love it, though. So that's what we got for our two teams that we think obviously did great things so far in free agency. Now we're going to flip the script a little bit, and we're going to pick a couple of teams that we didn't think did so hot this year. And Manish, I'm going to throw back to you. You're on a roll, so let me know what team is really kicking the can down the road with what they've been doing.
Well, I'm going to give what a lot of people would say would be the correct answer. I don't actually believe this, and I'll explain it to you, you know, in a bit why. But a team that hemorrhaged a lot of their key pieces, specifically on defense this offseason, are the defending Super Bowl champions, the Philadelphia Eagles. Everybody who watched that game knows that they could have given the Super Bowl MVP to each individual starter on defense. That defense completely dominated that game, really undressed Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, which is something that, you know, not very many teams have done over the last decade. But they lost about, what, four or five key pieces. We talked about Milton Williams, a solid contributor on the defensive line. The surprise move this offseason was that they traded their safety, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, to the Texans, which I don't think very many people saw at all. That, to me, was completely out of left field. They got Kenyon Green, a former first-round guard, who has really been disappointing in Houston. You know, you don't trade away former first-round picks at offensive line who are still in their mid-20s if there's not a problem. And he has just not lived up to the expectation. The belief from a Philadelphia perspective is that Jeff Stoutland, their offensive line coach, who has done wonders for players for the last, you know, what, decade or so since Chip Kelly actually hired him, ironically. Kelly, who, you know, has long since been gone, the best, you know, part of his legacy is hiring Jeff Stoutland. People believe that Stoutland can work with Kenyon Green, and he's going to have to work with Kenyon Green because I'll get back to the defensive losses in a second, but the one significant offensive loss that the Eagles had was their starting guard, Mekhi Becton, who resurrected his career after dealing with a bunch of injuries as a former first-round tackle prospect for the Jets. And he got a two-year, $20 million deal with the Chargers, so he's gone. Eagles are going to have to kind of fill that gap, you know, whether it's Green, the guy they got from the Texans, or whether it's Tyler Steen, an in-house option they have, remains to be seen. But again, getting back to the defense, they retained Zach Bond. He was a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year at linebacker. I thought that was absolutely pivotal. They did that. I thought they should have signed Becton back. They didn't do it. The other guys, look, Darius Slay has had a terrific career with the Eagles since coming over from the Detroit Lions. He's on the wrong side of 30. He ends up walking in free agency and signing in Pittsburgh, but he was a starter, so you can't discount that. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, starter. Milton Williams, you know, starter half the time, but, you know, key contributor on defense. Josh Sweat, who had a legitimate case to be Super Bowl MVP. He had 2.5 sacks against the Chiefs. He's a guy that, you know, the Eagles kind of have looked to move on from each of the past two seasons. Not a surprise that he ended up leaving and kind of reunited with his former defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, in Arizona. But again, these are all key contributing pieces. Isaiah Rodgers, who some people thought could be their third quarterback this year, he left in free agency. A couple other guys, Oren Burks, you know, occasional contributor on defense, but they lost a lot of guys. They didn't really re-sign anyone other than Zach Bond of consequence. They'll get that back in compensatory picks next year, but Howie Roseman hinted at this after the Super Bowl. I think he actually hinted at it during the contract extension press conference for Saquon Barkley. They extended him when they didn't really need to. Kind of a head-scratcher from my perspective, and I love Saquon Barkley, but not something that they really needed to do. But at that press conference, Howie Roseman did say, look, Eagles fans are going to have to be patient. It's going to be a different kind of offseason, something that they're not used to. So I think if you look at it from the outside, you can say, well, the Eagles are hemorrhaging players left and right. They're losing four or five key contributors on defense, you know, a defense that really carried them this season and carried them throughout the playoffs and into the Lombardi Trophy. But I think if you look at it a little bit closer, look, not ideal that they lost some of these guys, but these aren't the game-changing players that they already have on the roster. So they have Jalen Carter. They have Quinyon Mitchell. They have Cooper DeJean, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, all those guys along the offensive line, Mulata, Cam Jurgens, Landon Dickerson, all those Pro Bowlers, all pros. I just think what fans sometimes lose sight of is that free agency for the great teams is usually quiet. The teams that are struggling the most, that need the most to improve on and to need to upgrade their roster spots the most, are the most active ones. That's why teams like, no disrespect to the Patriots, but it is what it is. A team coming off, consecutive 4-win seasons, a new head coach, a lot of money to burn. They're the teams that are going to be super active. Whereas the teams that, already have the great players in-house are not going to be as active. So I think it's easy to overreact and say, oh, what are the Eagles doing? What's Howie Roseman doing? They're getting fat and lazy. When the truth of the matter is that the teams that are signing players, they don't have A.J. Brown. They don't have Saquon Barkley or Jalen Carter or Quinyon Mitchell. They don't have the core pieces that the Eagles already have in place. So while it looks like the Eagles are hemorrhaging a lot of players, the facts will say, yes, they are. They have lost 4 or 5 key contributors, but the bottom line is that the foundation of the Eagles is so much more solid than 95% of the teams in the league that I don't think it's that big of a deal, to be quite honest. I thought Zach Bond was indispensable. The Eagles had been struggling at linebacker for a decade, and he finally landed a spot with a coordinator in Vic Fangio that knew how to use him and knew how to use him in a very productive way. He could not walk out the door. Eagles made sure he didn't walk out the door. Everybody else, quite frankly, and again, no disrespect to those guys, everybody else that they lost is relatively easily replaceable.
Well, I was going to say, if there's one place that Zach Bond wanted to walk to, he could have walked to the Patriots and we would have taken him with open arms. That's all I'm trying to say at this point. But no, I don't disagree. I mean, the biggest thing, obviously, being a Patriots fan that I can reflect on with what you were talking about there is anytime a team wins a Super Bowl, immediately the stock of all the players on that roster immediately explodes because everybody looks at you with, oh, you got a ring on that finger. You're going to come win a ring with us. That's how it works. And I obviously, the sun shines brightest on the players that just won a championship. And I think obviously, like I talked about Milton Williams, I'm not bummed that the Patriots got him. I can't wait to see what he does. Do I think we overpaid for him? I think a little bit. So, but let me get.
It's just relative. Like, yeah, in a vacuum, did you quote unquote overpay for him? Probably, but that doesn't matter. What's his value to your team? That's what matters. I mean, if you overpaid him because you thought on paper his skill set and his production suggest that he should get, whatever, $3 million per year less, okay, you overpaid for him. It doesn't matter. If he produces for you, then the overpay is not going to be a discussion point. It only becomes a discussion point when he doesn't perform to the level that you think that or that you envision him performing at. So look, overpay is a word that, fans, media, they throw around a lot. I mean, I get it. I totally understand it. In the end, it doesn't matter. You think Mike Vrabel, Elliott Wolf, give a crap about how much they paid if he does produce at a high level? They're not going to care. It's not going to matter.
True. For me as a fan, the perspective I always looked at is, especially with the Brady era where he always took the pay cut to get the better players for the roster. That's the way I look at it, is like, okay, are we overspending over here for a guy that we could really put that money towards something else? Just to briefly touch on it, like I talked about with the receiver position and the offensive line position are completely in turmoil right now with the Patriots, where the defensive line, if you sat there and you told me going into the offseason that the Patriots absolutely need to address their defensive line, I would say they need to address their pass rushers. Now, nose tackle? Probably not if Christian Barmore's healthy. But again, trading away Godchalk and all that, I could go on for hours, Manish. Don't get me sidetracked. I'm here to talk smack about other teams, not my Patriots, so don't do that to me. I'm going to get into the team. You talked about your Eagles, obviously hemorrhaging a couple players there. I'm going to talk about a team that is really, really hemorrhaging players. And of course, I'm talking about the San Francisco 49ers, who, no disrespect to them, they've arguably been one of the brightest teams over the last decade or so with the success they've had, which has not led to Super Bowl wins. They've gone to multiple Super Bowls, but the roster that they had built, especially with Kyle Shanahan there and John Lynch, the job that they have done together has been really, really well. this year, I think the cows had to come home at some point where they are just they are just like I said, bleeding off players. It seems like where Kyle Juszczyk is the only one coming back really that, you know, he briefly split up with them. And then it was like, oh, the old ex-girlfriend, she's got to come home at some point. So here he comes. He's coming back on a small deal there. But I know Christian McCaffrey will be happy about that. But if we're going to talk about players, well, actually, let me get into a player that they added that I really, I'm going to have fun with this one again. They got the coveted quarterback that they've needed for so long, because obviously Brock Purdy's not the answer. So Hogan, who is the answer to quarterback position? It's Mac Jones. Mac Jones is going to the San Francisco 49ers. 2-year deal. Oh, their prayers have been answered. Mac Jones is there to lead them to the promised land. You Pats fans out there, you Between the Tackle fans know how much I despise Mac Jones. So obviously I got to give the 49ers an F- grade for signing Macaroni Jones. That bum, that bum can go have fun out there in the sun in the 49erville. But no, let's talk about the actual players that I want to talk about that they actually lost this year. Where obviously the big trade that came through, I think right before free agency started, was actually Deebo Samuel getting packaged to the Washington Commanders for a late round pick. Not really a head scratcher at this point, considering his injury history and his very severe case of the drops that he had this past season when he was on the field. But obviously with the signing of Brandon Ayuk and the emergence of, I think it was Juwan Jennings. They obviously felt that they didn't really need Deebo anymore at this point. So he was obviously moved. But then you look at the players that actually have left town. Javon Hargrave is a big one that they signed a few years ago to a massive deal, actually from your Eagles, if I'm not mistaken, right? Where he is now with the Minnesota Vikings. And he did not pan out with the 49ers whatsoever. But then on top of that, Dre Greenlaw was never able to come back from that injury he sustained in the Super Bowl there, where he is no longer with the team. They also, I got to scroll down because there's literally so many names that I was going through where I was like, I can't believe Elijah Mitchell, that the safety, and I apologize if I butchered his name. Ward? Well, Tre'Davious Ward's another one, that a cornerback, but the safety is Hufanga. He's another one that obviously he went to the Broncos there. It's just, if you look at how many players have left the 49ers where they still have decent talent on the team, don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting there saying that the 49ers are not going to win any games next year. They obviously still have the likes of George Kittle. They have Christian McCaffrey. If Brandon Ayuk gets back to the player he was before he signed that contract, he should be a number one wide receiver for them. I mean, there was talk all over the place about the Patriots trying to trade for him at one point. But the interesting thing will be what happens with Brock Purdy at this point, because he's a guy that has not been signed, where obviously the deal is out there that he's got to get paid at some point, right? Or they got to turn the page. And if they really think Mac Jones is the answer, I'm telling you, 49er fans, if you're listening, he is not the answer. So don't put your chickens in that basket, okay? Eggs in that basket is what I should say. So for me, so far, with the position that they've been in, what they've lost talent-wise across the board, and hopefully they can, you know, replace it in the draft. I'm looking at their draft picks right now. They got a whole plethora of them. They're picking 11th overall in the first round. The San Francisco 49ers have got some work to do if they want to get competitive back in the NFC West division out there. Manish, you got anything before we move on to the next one?
Yeah, I think it's funny that Mac Jones is with Kyle Shanahan, because if you remember in the run-up to the draft, there were rumors circulating that the guy that Kyle Shanahan really wanted up in the draft was Mac Jones. Ultimately, that was false. He wanted Trey Lance, but he ends up, you know, working with Kyle Shanahan. Look, I don't know what's going to happen with Mac Jones, but what I do know is that a few years ago, Sam Darnold came to the 49ers, kind of left for dead, and you know, spending a year with Kyle Shanahan helped him resurrect his career. He obviously got a great opportunity in Minnesota, but you know, I think it could help Mac Jones' career. Who knows what that means? You know, I can't tangibly tell you what that means, but it never hurts if you're a young quarterback or relatively young quarterback to spend some time with Kyle Shanahan.
Well said. All right, we are going to move on to our next subject here, and we are actually going to talk about, instead of teams this time, we are going to talk about individual players. So Manish, I want you to kick this off for us, and I want you to tell me which player landed in the perfect spot with a perfect team of their choice in free agency.
Well, look, this guy's better years are behind him, but I still think he can play at a very high level for another year or two. He certainly played well in the tail end of last season, and it's Devontae Adams. I think it's a great spot. He essentially replaces Cooper Kupp. He goes from Aaron Rodgers to Matthew Stafford. So really not that much drop off there. He's got All-Pro, Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver on the other side in Puka Nacua, a genius in my estimation as coach in Sean McVay. Good running game, really lines up well for him. I know he wanted to go back to the West Coast. He's not going to have to deal with any kind of quarterback issue. So he's got the legit stud quarterback. He doesn't have to carry the team because there's enough offensive weapons in addition to him. And he's playing really well. If you just look at the back half of last season, after he was traded to the Jets, he's still playing at a good level. He's not playing at the all-pro level that he was when he was younger. That's to be expected. But I think that's a great addition for the Rams. I think they upgrade from Cooper Kupp to Devontae Adams, to be honest. And I think it's a great move at this stage of Devontae Adams' career to go to a place that has established system, star head coach, star quarterback, star receiver opposite him. I think it makes perfect sense. Two-year deal, about $22 million a season, good money. So he's not working on the cheap. But I think it's just a perfect scenario for him, perfect scenario for the Rams to continue to be competitive. Because, look, let's be honest here. The Rams were a play or two away from beating the Eagles on the road in the playoffs. And if not for the snow, maybe they would have done it. Or if not for Jalen Carter, making a key hit late in that game in the red zone on Matthew Stafford, maybe we're talking about a completely different scenario. And maybe the Rams are Super Bowl champions.
Well said, except for the part where you said that Devontae Adams is an upgrade over Cooper Kupp, because I'm still bitter. I wanted Cooper Kupp. I think he was better. Cooper Kupp is the man, and I'm still angry at him for going to Seattle. I'm just kidding. Obviously, no, it'll be fascinating to see how the Devontae Adams and Matthew Stafford hookup emerges from, I almost said St. Louis. Look at me. I'm living in the past again here. Well, speaking of past, I'm going to talk about the guy that I think obviously latched onto the perfect team. And for me, might be a little bit of a surprise out there, but I'm going with Najee Harris. And Manish, looking at Najee's stats, are actually, he's got to be the most consistent guy in the NFL right now. It's kind of crazy. If you look at what he did in his four-year tenure with the Pittsburgh Steelers, taken in the first round there out of Alabama, he's rushed for over 1,000 yards all 4 years he's been in the league, which is, I honestly wouldn't have known that if you had told me that. But looking at his stats, and he's barely cracked 1,000 yards the last 3 years. His rookie year was arguably his best year for rushing for 1,200 yards. But touchdown-wise, he's consistent. He averages almost 4 yards a carry every time he touches the ball there. And a big thing that a lot of people always talk about when they talk about the L.A. See, I caught myself. I almost said San Diego, but I didn't do it. It's the L.A. Chargers that he's going to with the Harbaugh brother out there. That is fascinating to me is how much Jim loves to run the football. And you and I have talked about it a million times, obviously. And they had decent running guys with J.K. Dobbins. And I'm mind farting on the other one right now. But
that's Edwards.
Thank you. The Edwards, the former Ravens running backs that he got out there to run the ball. And they had a great running game this year going into the playoffs. And I think adding a guy like Najee Harris, if he stays healthy and he's able to get behind Justin Herbert and, those guys can feed off each other with running the ball and the play action, and Najee's able to, up his game in terms of catching the ball as well, too. That could be one of the best signings in the NFL that not a lot of people are talking about, because you got to think a couple of years ago, they had the likes of Austin Eckler, who was kind of that all-around guy who went to the Commanders and it's actually, minus the injury, was doing really well for the Commanders for a point there. I think Najee Harris could be a plug-and-play guy, that number one like running back for the LA Chargers to really take the ball and just take off with it. And I think he could have a career year out there, especially with Harbaugh coaching that team. So I absolutely love Najee Harris going to the LA Chargers. So we talked. Oh, go ahead. What do you got for me? You got something burning.
I love it. I love that choice. He was somebody who I was considering as well. Jim Harbaugh loves running the ball. I think he made that abundantly clear last year. Harris, to me, he's got good football left. It's funny. You think about Najee Harris, you think he's been around forever. And you're like, oh, what is he, 31, 32 years old? How old is the guy? He's 27. He'll be 28 before the season starts. But I think he's a perfect fit for the offense. He's going to help out Justin Herbert. And, low-key Chargers have made a couple good moves. Not only the Najee Harris, we mentioned Mekhi Becton improved their offensive line at guard. And a guy who, look, he's not going to move the needle on the outside looking in, but Mike Williams returning and playing with Justin Herbert, to me, was a smart move. They're not really paying him anything. Justin Herbert's familiar with him. They had success together. Those are three moves that really don't get discussed much. I mean, Harris gets discussed more than the other two, but three moves on the offensive side of the ball that I think, you know, can really help Harbaugh and Herbert.
Right. So we'll see how it pans out. But one thing that we know is going to hopefully pan out for us Patriot fans is just seeing the demise of the Kansas City Chiefs. So I'll be rooting for the Chargers all the time when it comes down to it. That's me in a nutshell. Obviously I hate the Chiefs, so I got to go with that, but we're going to move. We're going to flip the script now, where we talked about the players that signed in the best possible spots for them to the players that made the worst decision in free agency. And Manish, I'm going to kick this one off really quickly. I'm going to go into it, and this might be kind of a head scratcher for some of you out there, because in some aspects, I can see it being a great signing. But for me personally, for the player and where he's going, I'm talking about DeAndre Hopkins going to the Baltimore Ravens. And I know a lot of people out there are probably like, Hogan, he's still a great receiver. Arguably, I think the past has caught up to him at this point, where he is not the player he once was. But he signed a one-year deal, $5 million, to go to the Ravens, where the Ravens seem to do this. It's like year in and year out, where they bring in your Odell Beckhams. They bring in like these older receivers that hook up with Lamar Jackson for a year and then they vanish or whatever. And they, what was it? Hollywood Brown was another one that was there for a little bit. Then they traded him to the Cardinals. So if DeAndre Hopkins was 10 years younger, I'd say this is a slam dunk of a deal. But the fact is, Hopkins is looking for that ring. He's coming off the Super Bowl loss that he had with the Chiefs, where he had that abysmal drop in that game that just a lot of people still remember. And he didn't do massive big things for the Chiefs when he went there. Him going to the Ravens, who are a run-heavy team, and I know I say that where Lamar Jackson had the ridiculous numbers that he did this year, but again, he's not – DeAndre Hopkins is not the player he once was. And that's what I'm trying to – my point is, I think he would have been well better off going to a team where he could play the game but not have to be the focal point. And I know obviously they have Zay Flowers and they have some other guys there that can take that heat off of him, but I just don't see him having that sustained success. And I don't see the Ravens making that deep playoff run unless they're able to finally, you know, beat the Chiefs eventually. This just doesn't feel like a good signing for me. That is what I'm trying to say. I know I'm going all over the place here, but DeAndre Hopkins, I thought, was going to go to a place where either going back to the Chiefs, I thought would have made sense, where he built a home there with Mahomes and he could have run it back and those guys could have improved, especially with the injuries that they sustained for the Chiefs this year. But the Ravens, it felt like a head scratcher to me. So I'd wish you well, DeAndre Hopkins, but the Ravens are another team that I don't really like that much. So it's okay. You don't have to have that good of a season. All right. So let's move on to Manish's pick for a player that did not make the best move.
Yeah, look, this is a guy who he had been front and center. He put himself out there. I think he was on a, you know, de facto media tour during the Super Bowl week, letting everybody know that he wants to get traded. And ultimately, he decided to take a boatload of money and stay in a place where he's never going to win. And it's Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett, you know, arguably the best defensive player in the NFL. I think he's going to be 30, like at some point this upcoming season. But for the most of the season, I believe he'll be 29. So he's still got several years of good play left. And like ultimately signed an extension that gives him an annual salary of $40 million. I believe that's the highest paid non-quarterback currently in the NFL. Probably going to be surpassed by Ja'Marr Chase when he signs his deal in the coming weeks and months about $123-124 million in guaranteed money in that extension. So, hey, you know, Myles Garrett, good for you. I mean, you made a ton of money long before this extension, but this puts you in a different stratosphere. I understand that, but you know, it's a head scratcher to me if you say publicly you want to be traded, you make it clear by talking to anybody within earshot that you want out, and then you do an about face a couple weeks later to sign with probably the most dysfunctional team in the NFL, if not the Jets, the Browns, whatever, you pick your poison, one of those, one of the most dysfunctional organizations in the NFL, because they gave you a lot of money. Now, I know the Browns stance publicly had been, we're not going to trade him. Everyone has a price, however, especially if you're not a quarterback and if you're an aging player. He's got good years left, but it's not like he's 24. He's 29. Maybe the Browns, didn't look that hard to try to trade him because they understand how dominant of a player he is. But I just think if you're Myles Garrett and you draw a line in the sand and publicly come out and say, look, I want out, I want to win. I got a few years left. I want to win a Super Bowl. You can't come out and say that stuff and then take the money from the Browns. That's what I thought was odd. Now, if he felt that way and didn't publicly say it over and over over the past month, month and a half, then okay, you know, it's tough to criticize him. But the reason I'm criticizing him is because he was so forward and so public about his desire to leave, and nothing in Cleveland changed. It's not as if they, you know, got a new head coach who actually I liked, or ownership or GM, or there's nothing different. They didn't get a new quarterback. Everything stayed the same. The only thing that changed was this boatload of money that they threw at Myles Garrett, and he took it. And I just, you know, that something doesn't sit right with me. And I think if you look at, you know, when he looks back on this, he might not care. You know, he's got all 120 some odd million dollars in extra guaranteed money. He might not care. But if he actually cared about what he said he cared about, which was winning a Super Bowl, then he's going to regret this decision, because he's not going to come anywhere close to winning a Super Bowl over the next handful of years in Cleveland.
Absolutely. You, this deal was like, I couldn't believe the fact that, like you said, he made it so abundantly clear that he wanted out. He wanted nothing to do with Cleveland, and everybody's sitting there going, yeah, no crap. Like, Cleveland's a terrible team. Why are you there in the first place? Obviously, he got drafted there, but it's just like, get out of there as soon as possible. You have a chance of winning anywhere else. And he obviously need about face where it's like, oh, the bank is open. Well, back up the truck, guys. I'm not going anywhere. Which, granted, I sit here and I'm talking smack about him. If they opened that bank vault to me, yours truly would sit in Cleveland for the next 10 years if I had to. I mean, I'll take that money. But again, he's in a position that he's in where he wants to win a ring. You're not going to win in Cleveland anytime soon. So I don't disagree with you in the slightest. And we're going to keep the misery train going, because it feels so good to talk smack, Manish. You know that. We love talking smack on this show here. We obviously talked about the players that made the worst decision. Now we're going to kick it back to the teams that made the worst decision in terms of the player they signed, where we talked about either the overpayment or that is just not going to benefit the team overall. And I'm going to start with you on this one. Who do you got for the team that really screwed up by giving the contract they did?
Yeah, I don't understand why the Titans gave Dan Moore, left tackle for the Steelers the past several years, a four-year, $82 million deal. Dan Moore is a player who gave up a league-high 12 sacks last year at the left tackle position. Now he is a top 10 paid tackle in the NFL, average of, you know, a little over $20 million. I think that puts him around ninth in the NFL in average per year among all tackles. And again, he gave up, I'll say it again, he gave up a league-high 12 sacks last year. And this is a player who the Steelers have tried to replace in each, I guess, two of the last three or four drafts. They drafted two tackles, Broderick Jones and Fontenot. They both, you know, dealt with injury and some inconsistency. So Moore, who was healthy, was, you know, at the left tackle spot. But this isn't a player that the Steelers believed in, and they made that clear by who they drafted in the first round in two of the recent drafts. I think it's also an indictment on J.C. Latham. This is a player who was the seventh pick in the draft last year by Tennessee. He played left tackle last year. They're not happy with his play at left tackle, so he's going to move back to his right tackle spot that I believe he played at Alabama. And the free agent, Moore, is going to be their left tackle. And if you're being generous about it, Dan Moore is an average player, a pedestrian tackle. You know, if you're being really ultra critical about it, you would say that he's clearly a below average tackle, yet he's getting paid top 10 money. So, I mean, kudos to his agent, who did an unbelievable job getting him this contract. I hope that Dan Moore took his agent out to many dinners, because the idea of Dan Moore getting 4 years, $82 million, I believe the guaranteed money, which includes guaranteed at signing and guaranteed for injury, not just fully guaranteed, was somewhere around $50, $51 million, which is an absurd amount of money for a player that has produced the results that he has. It's a head scratcher to me. I know it was a thin left tackle market, and he became a free agent at the exact right time. And kudos to him. I do not begrudge him taking the money. Anybody in the position would. I just think when the Titans look back on this deal in 2 or 3 years, they're going to be thinking, what do we do? What do we do here? This kind of does not make sense to me on any logical level.
Well, you know me. I love when Tennessee screws up. So, of course, I'm going to dump all over their parade down there. I love seeing that. I don't disagree with you in the slightest. Like I said, I got to get that agent so I can sign up to get that amount of money to let up as many sacks as they want, because that's just crazy to me. I mean, I would love to, you know, to get beat down every Sunday for that kind of money. But for my guy, obviously, who I'm going with, I got to go with a team that is just an enigma to me at this point. And I'm talking about the New Orleans Saints, where they are just in cap hell right now. They can't dig themselves out of a grave fast enough with how much money they have on the books, where they are so burned on the cap at this point. They just signed Chase Young to a 3-year, $51 million deal, where I think I was reading that they are, where is it? Right here. The Saints are $11 million over the cap for 2025 already. And they just pay. I'm going to lose my temper, which is just ridiculous because it's the Saints. I really don't care about the Saints at the end of the day. But it just mind boggles me that they're overpaying for a guy like Chase Young. And no disrespect to Chase Young, because honestly, I don't know him. He could be a great guy and all that. But when it comes to the player, he's only played one full season in his 6 years in the league. And that was last year with the Saints, who had a terrible year. Granted, I know they had all their injuries and their head coach got fired halfway through the season and whatnot. But Manish, right here, I'm going to tell you his stats from last year. 17 games played. He had 21 solo tackles, only 31 total, 5.5 sacks, and 1 forced fumble. And they just gave him 3 years, $51 million. Like, he's some coming-of-age defensive end that is just phenomenal. He's never had double-digit sacks in the NFL, which is what he was drafted second overall out of Ohio State to the Washington Commanders for, to be a sack master. His best year was his rookie year, 7.5 sacks. Second best year was last year with the Saints at 5.5. I don't know what we're doing. If I'm a Saints fan, I am livid right now. I could tell you that. I just can't understand it for the life of me. Again, no disrespect to Chase Young. Go get you. Chase that money. That's what you got to do at this point, because that's the only thing you're getting at this point, where you're not getting the sacks. You can chase the money, and he got it from the Saints, which just, like I said, blows my mind that they were able to give him that. But all right, we've done enough negativity. We talked too much crap about some people and some teams. We're going to talk now about the smartest or best contract given out by a team. Manish, what do you got for me?
Well, let me preface this by saying I went off on Chase Young, you know, getting money, you know, guys is trying to make a living, you know, support his family. 3 years, $51 million. You really do have to look at the details. On the surface, it does not look like it makes a lot of sense. I think if you dig a little bit deeper, I would imagine that at best, it's a 2-year deal. Maybe it's a 1-year deal with the Saints have an easy escape hatch after the season. You know, the details of every contract is really what matters. The raw numbers that come out initially are what we talk about, but I would be very surprised if he's going to see anywhere close to the $51 million that this deal is touted as. Now, as far as the best contract or, you know, the best signing, I like the DJ Moore, the DJ Reed deal. We talked about DJ Reed replacing Carlton Davis earlier in the pod. It on the surface, 3 years, I believe $48 million, so $16 million a year. So on an average per year basis, he's the 18th highest paid corner. Again, I don't know the details. I've looked closer at the deal, but just from a player perspective, adding DJ Reed to me is an upgrade. I know that you and I disagree on that, but I think it's an upgrade from Carlton Davis at this point. DJ Reed to me, when he signed as a free agent several years ago, coming out of Seattle, you could have easily made a case that he was just as good as Sauce Gardner in Gardner's first 2 years. I know Gardner was first team all pro. I take that with a grain of salt. If you look a little bit closer at how Gardner played and how Reed played, I think they were more like one in 1A. Last year, Reed's play, much like a lot of the players on the Jets' play, kind of fell off. I think a lot of that was disinterest, and that's not an excuse and probably shouldn't have been the case. But, you know, DJ Reed at 28 years old still has a lot of good football left in him. I think he's going to be a great addition opposite of Terry and Arnold, their first round pick from a year ago. I think he is, you know, probably as good as half the number, quote unquote, number one corners on teams, even though he's technically a number two corner. He's a solid player who will be an upgrade on the back end for Detroit. We know about Detroit's problems on defense last year due to injury and a lot of other reasons. He's going to a winning organization. I think he's going to be revitalized, you know, going from a losing place to a winning place. I like it a lot. I love him as a player. I love everything about him. I wish he were 25 instead of 28, but, you know, bringing that guy into the mix in a league that, you know, shaky enough with cornerbacks was, to me, a great move by Brad Holmes and the Detroit Lions.
I'll hold judgment until we see what Carlton Davis versus DJ Reed does before we say who's better on that one. That's all I'm going to throw for you there. No, I like what you're saying there. I don't disagree. I think DJ Reed's a great player, and he obviously is going to a great organization with the Lions there. So it'd be fascinating to see how he matches up with everybody in the vaunted NFC North up there with everybody that they got. But for me and my contract that I really liked, that I thought was the smartest by either by the team and the player, believe it or not, I'm going to a former Giants quarterback, and that's Daniel Jones, who got a 1 year, I want to say it was $14 million for the Indianapolis Colts, which this feels like a no-brainer deal for both sides, right? Because at the end of the day, Anthony Richardson has proven time and time again that he is not exactly the most reliable quarterback in the league. I mean, albeit whether it's injuries, obviously he got banged up, obviously his first year where he missed a ton of time. And then this year, as we covered very openly about the whole I needed a breather game, where I still, to the life of me, I can't believe that a quarterback in a professional setting actually said that. That being said, Daniel Jones obviously came off of what happened with the New York Giants, where he was inevitably benched and asked for his release. He was let out into the wild, where the Minnesota Vikings grabbed him, and I think they put him on their practice squad for a little while, where he never really saw any action for the Minnesota Vikings because Sam Darnold did what he did there. Daniel Jones fits that kind of bill that the Indianapolis offense wants to run with Richardson, where Richardson, I think you can make the argument, is a tremendous runner when he has the ball and he's healthy and he's able to get down the field, where Daniel Jones can do the same thing. He's very good at running the ball. They're both very questionable when it comes to their passing abilities, where they can throw the ball. I mean, not to any tremendous success, obviously, based off of what's happened in both of their careers at this point. But I'm looking at it as if anything happens to Richardson where he can't go, he gets injured, he needs a breather, or the coach wants to just sit him and be like, you know what, you're not the answer here. I think Daniel Jones is not a bad replacement in that fact, where they're going to take a 1 year deal on him, a chance, and just see what they got. And if he's a guy that can be a long term solution for the Colts, why not? And at worst, he's just a 1 year rental where you just sit there and go, okay, well, we'll find another backup quarterback. So, end of the day, I think that was a winning deal for, like I said, both Daniel Jones and the Indianapolis Colts. Whether it comes to fruition or not, I have no idea. That's why I'm just a guy who yaps on a podcast, but we will certainly see. Before we wrap this sucker up, Manish, I know you wanted to touch a little bit on a little bit of the numbers magic that teams like to pull when it comes to contracts. You and I obviously talked about it with Milton Williams, where you talked about how it's really a four-year deal, but in reality, it's more or less a two-year deal with player options on there that the team can decide on whether he performs or not. Do you want to go in a little bit of detail about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of discussion about how Milton Williams is now the highest paid player on a per year basis in the history of the Patriots organization. But if you look at the details a little bit closer, it's essentially a 2 year, $51 million deal. He could earn about $55 million in the first 2 years based on the per game roster bonuses. What I found fascinating about the contract is that he's got about $8.5 million tied into per game roster bonuses. That's about $100,000 per game for the first 2 years of the contract, $150,000 per game over the final 2 years of the contract, should he stay the 4 years. It's the second highest contract tied to per game roster bonuses, I believe, in NFL history. A few years back, Za'Darius Smith had $9 million tied to per game roster bonuses when he signed with the Vikings. Now, Milton Williams has been healthy, you know, by and large his entire career, but he's been a younger player, so who knows, you know, what the next several years holds. It's fascinating because I thought that the Patriots did a really good job in how they structured the deal, not only from the guaranteed money standpoint, but after year two, the guaranteed money runs out. So the final 2 years of the contract are de facto team option years. So the Patriots get to choose whether they want to keep or cut Williams with really little of no financial ramification. I think if they cut him after 2 years, it's about a $12 million dead cap, you know, nothing consequential. And then they have a team option for year four as well. So it's essentially a 2 year contract with two team option years after that. But that doesn't get discussed. What gets discussed is the $104 million deal or whatever it was, $102 million, whatever that was in the average per year. So I thought that the deal was structured really well from New England standpoint. Obviously, Milton Williams is happy because he's getting paid more money than he's ever gotten in the NFL to this point in his career. The other thing that I thought was interesting, the Vikings signed cornerback Byron Murphy back to a what was reported a three-year, $66 million deal. That would mean $22 million per year, which would make him the fourth highest paid cornerback in the NFL behind J.C. Horn, Jalen Ramsey, and Patrick Surtain. That's not what the contract actually is. The contract is 3 years, I believe, $52 million. Let me just make sure I'm not screwing this up. 3 years, $54 million, with $12 million in incentives, escalators, things of that nature. So typically, if you were reporting this, you would say it's a three-year deal for a max value of $66 million or up to $66 million. The way it was reported was that it was just a straight three-year $66 million deal, which makes the agent look great. It makes the player feel good because he thinks, wow, I'm a top four paid cornerback in the NFL. The reality is that the average per year, when you take out the you know, the $12 million in incentives is that Byron Murphy's like tied for the 13th highest paid cornerback with three other guys. Just a little bit of maybe inside baseball stuff that goes on. Agents typically leak contract information to reporters during free agency. It's rare that the general manager or the guy who negotiates the contracts with the agent on the team releases the information for a number of different reasons. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I would say 90%, I think I'm probably being conservative, the 90% of the information that's leaked in free agency when it comes to who's signing and what the contract details are come from agents. And again, it's self-serving because it makes the agent look good. Obviously, the reporter is happy because they're breaking the news. They're the first or among the first to tweet about the information because that's where the information gets delivered these days on X, on Twitter. But you do have to take it with a grain of salt. It's not until the contract's actually filed with the league where you find the details, the real details, the year-by-year breakdown, the signing bonus, the workout bonuses, the option bonuses, the dead cap hits after a certain amount of years. That's when you really find out what the contract is. Unfortunately, that happens a day or two or 3 days later. And by then, fans have already talked about Milton Williams' $104 million contract. They don't care about what the actual contract is. So I always found that fascinating. I know that during free agency, it was very stressful from a reporter standpoint because you want to be the first to tweet it out. The other element of this is that there are certain agents that will group text reporters. Sometimes it's a couple of local reporters. Sometimes it's just the national reporters, and the local reporters have to quote unquote confirm it by reaching out to the agent, or on some teams they reach out to the media relations representative who will confirm it for the reporter who covers the team who didn't quote unquote break the news because the agent texted a national reporter. Now, I've been on text threads where information breaks and I have a really good relationship with a particular agent, but that agent also has a good relationship with one or two other national reporters. So there'll be three people on the text chain. So it's pretty transparent. You see the people who are on the text chain and the information is just texted out there. You can cut and paste it if you want and put it on Twitter. You can write it in your own language, frame it however you want to frame it, but the agent will put forth the highlights of the deal, like why it makes sense. There are many times where you'll see a reporter tweet out the information and say, now the player is the highest paid linebacker in the NFL. Well, I can tell you with 100% certainty that virtually every reporter who covers the NFL doesn't know what the highest paid linebacker gets or the highest paid cornerback gets or new money for extensions. That information is given directly in the text from agents. And now, to be honest, I think it's actually done much better now than it was 5, 10 years ago, where you had to source the information, because now you'll see a lot of reporters basically reveal who their sources are by giving the information and then saying that the deal was negotiated by this agent or these two agents. That, in effect, is them telling you they got this information from the agent. So the agent is the source. That, you know, that's something that I think over the last several years has taken up steam, not only in the NFL, but for NBA, high-level NBA reporting as well, which I think it makes sense because teams will allow these inflated numbers to be out there because they don't care. They know what the reality is. They know what the truth is. They're just happy that they signed the player. So they'll let the, you know, they'll let the agent leak the information to the reporter. It's okay. If the numbers are a little inflated, it doesn't really hurt the team. The team doesn't really care. There are certain general managers that have relationships with certain reporters, and they will tell the agent, hey, you know, I really would like for you to give this information to, you know, this reporter or that reporter, because they have, you know, relationships that's built up over time. And that's, you know, that's kudos to the reporter. And, you know, cultivating relationships is a big part of the media industry. But I always find it funny when you can't just say, hey, you know what, this agent told me that his player signed with this team for this amount of money. Sometimes agents do that, but a lot of times it's just kind of like, okay, here's the information. Oh, by the way, the deal was negotiated by Drew Rosenhaus. Well, Drew Rosenhaus is the guy who gave you the information. You know, this is just an example, you know, nothing specific, but I just find it interesting, you know, from a media perspective that it's come to this point now where agents' names are being thrown out there by reporters, as they should, because they are the guys who are giving these reporters the information. And in the end, honestly, if you're working during the day, you don't even care who breaks the news because you don't even know who breaks the news. Because like I said earlier, a national reporter may break the news and then everybody that covers the team, and trust me, there are a lot of people in New York that cover the Giants and the Jets. Everybody who covers the team will text or email the agent and ask for confirmation that this report true? Well, you already know it's true because you know that the agent is the one who gave the national reporter, for example, the information. A lot of times now teams have, like I said, public relations, media relations representatives who you can text and say, hey, look, there's a report out there. DJ Reed signed with the Lions. Can you confirm that's true? The agent will say yes. That's why within a span of 5 minutes, you know, seven, and again, I'm just making this part up, seven Detroit Lions beat reporters will confirm it because they're getting it, that confirmation in all likelihood from the exact same person, which is either the agent or the media relations representative for the team. So just a little bit of inside information, how things work in free agency. Ultimately, I know fans don't care, but I can tell you with great certainty that reporters care. You know, some people keep a scorecard on, you know, how many stories they broke in free agency versus their competition.
No, I find this stuff absolutely fascinating because it's so cool to get that inside look as to like what the actual deals in terms of this stuff are. And you and I were joking around where we were talking about this pre-recording where I went as far as a fan, like I'm sitting there on X at one point where I was in the frothy craziness of free agency where I think it was like Rappaport or somebody else just ended up like retweeting an agent that was like, congratulations to my client for signing a ridiculous deal or something like that, where it was just like, damn, like that's all you got to do now. You don't even have to announce it. You don't have to put a tweet out. You can just be like, oh, I'm going to retweet the agent because he's already over there just going crazy about the deal he signed. So it's fascinating to see that aspect like you talked about where these you get like, obviously, it's probably a smaller agent, which it 100% had to have been. Obviously, it wouldn't be like a Drew Rosenhaus in that aspect or something. But I mean, heck, if I'm an agent of an NFL player and I'm getting the guy paid millions of dollars where I know I'm getting commission on that, I'm probably jumping off my roof screaming at my neighbors what I did on free agency. So yeah, I completely get it.
It's funny because you understand how information, and this is how it used to be with the Patriots. I don't believe it's like this now just because the participants are gone. But, you know, there was a time when Bill Belichick was the head coach. He had a person who dealt with his PR. It wasn't Stacey James, who's, you know, a great guy. He's the PR, head PR guy for the Patriots. But there was somebody else who dealt specifically with Bill Belichick. And, you know, if you played ball and maybe didn't necessarily dig too deep that, you know, on stories that maybe reflected poorly on the organization, you might get rewarded by getting, you know, little transactional pieces of information. It's kind of a quid pro quo in that respect. Again, I don't believe that's the case anymore. But that was definitely the case when Bill Belichick was the head coach. And if you're a reporter, it's something you can show your editor and say, hey, look, I wrote this story, you know, but there is a cost to that. And I think the best reporters in the NFL that cover the NFL, you know, for my money, for the majority of my life was Peter King. You know, now that he's retired, Albert Breer, to me, is the best reporter covering the NFL because he is not afraid of reporting things that teams might not necessarily want out there. If that costs him some minor transactional piece of news, then so be it. But you know, those types of reporters are kind of a dying breed now because it's much easier to kind of follow the crowd at chow time, which is a phrase I always use. It's like a line from A Few Good Men. But it's so much easier to do that. We don't necessarily ruffle feathers. You'll get information confirmed. Every now and then you might get a trinket of information that a player is signing. But at the end of the day, that there's very little value in that. And I fell into, look, I'll be perfectly honest, full transparency. I fell into that trap for a very long time where it meant a lot to break some free agency news that within minutes, literally 10 people would have. So if you're away from your computer or you're not looking at your phone at work, you find out, you know, through whatever means that this player signed with your favorite team, you don't know who broke the story. You don't even care. All you know is that everyone's reporting it. It just means a lot for reporters. Reporters cared about that much more than fans do because fans don't care about it at all, to be perfectly honest. It was just something that, you know, meant a lot internally for some reporters. And it's a very competitive industry. But at the end of the day, if you think about it logically, if you got a story like 1 or 2 minutes before somebody else did, what's the real value in that? There is none. I mean, I know that, you know, it helps out people's careers. It helps people, you know, make a really great living and more power to them. And, you know, I got nothing but love for all those people who do that. But just stepping back from it and looking at, you know, what the real value is in getting that type of information, you know, from a readership perspective and a fan perspective, it's very little.
I want to, you know, caveat everything with that. You said you brought up A Few Good Men, and all I know is I just want the truth. And if you can't handle the truth, then I don't know what to tell you, Manish. No, that was well said. And that's really, really, again, really, really cool to get that whole aspect of that side of the NFL and free agency and everything like that. So I think, my friend, we went almost an hour and a half today. We talked way too much free agency stuff, obviously. We just went off the cusp here where we had to talk about anything and everything. And we didn't even, you know, break the surface of all the crazy dealings that have been going on. And free agency, obviously, is still going on. There's still some names that have not been taken care of yet. Cam Robinson, Patriots, if you're listening to this, I mean, that's just a tackle that I could throw out there that, I mean, granted, is he the best? Probably not. Again, I'm going to get on a tangent. We need to stop talking. Just sign them and I'll shut up. Okay. That's all I got for this episode, my friend. It was great talking to you. I can't wait to see what else we got for free agency. Obviously the next big, big ticket item on the NFL offseason is going to be the draft coming up in a few months there. Actually, no, what is it? A month, 2 months? Was it April or May now? They changed the dates. It's the NFL. You never know when it's going to be. It used to be a 1 day thing, 2 day thing. Now it's a 3 day spectacle, 5 day spectacle. Who knows? It's probably going to be a whole week thing by the time Roger Goodell gets as much money out of it as he possibly can. We'll be waiting as Patriot fans with bated breath to see what they do with the fourth pick overall. Mike Vrabel, please don't screw this up. You can't do any worse than Jerod Mayo did. So just do wonders for me, okay? All right. I'm done yapping. My friend, it was great talking to you. For all our loyal listeners out there, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for hanging out with us. As always, this is Between the Tackles here on the Fans First Sports Network. If you get a chance, go check out the Fans First Sports Network with all the shows they got out there. Amazing, great stuff. You're not going to want to miss it. And you're not going to want to miss the next episode of Between the Tackles. So without further ado, Manish, I will see you later.